You are listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM. The time is 10:59 a.m. Next up is The Dirtbag.
Portland 90.7 FM and streaming on the web at kboo.fm.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Executive Committee meets on the second Thursday of the month at 6 p.m. This month's meeting will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland and online through our public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting virtually can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
No. Okay, I think we're on, aren't we? Well, good morning, Jim.
Good morning.
I don't know if Jim's on, though. Let's see if you can pull up his mic there, Ty. How you doing, Jim? Was it a good trip in?
A very excellent trip in. Beautiful sunny day, spring in early February. Crazy, man.
This is Glenn Andreessen. You've tuned in to The Dirtbag here until 12 noon. A program that is dedicated to mostly edible gardening, a garden variety show.
And it's something we've been doing in a long time, Glenn, and I just can't tell you how much I enjoy it. It's
yep.
Great.
Even after all these years.
Yep.
Yeah, probably been doing this more than a quarter of a century, the Dirtbag.
You think? That's long.
Well, for me, it was before 2000, so.
Really? Wow, yeah. I think I joined you about 10 years after that. Cool. Well.
Okay, well, let's see. What do we got here now? Forgot my glasses, so bear with me. If you have questions, we always welcome gardening questions and even some beyond. There's been occasion there. 503-231-8187. We've got our plant of the month to begin with here. And then we'll talk about growing citrus in containers. As I mentioned on the website, the KBOO website, and our Dirtbagger part, that you can grow them here in Oregon, but it pretty much has to be in a big mobile container. Have you heard of any citrus being planted out just in the ground?
There's some really hardy citrus, but the fruit is less than ideal, and we've never had a lot of luck with it.
Okay.
You know, maybe in Portland, you guys, this year, you've had such an amazing climate. I mean, it's like, you know, I don't know if you've had a frost, hardly. I mean, it's... So, you know, that, but the problem, of course, is also heat and sunshine. And if it's cloudy and stuff, makes it more difficult.
Yeah, we have had a frost. We've had freezes. I mean, down to 24 or something like that.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, there was that week.
Okay.
Today it was even frosty, but my temperature was 37 or something like that. But there was frost.
Yeah, we had 28 this morning.
Yeah.
Liberal Nook. But
okay, so we'll talk about that then. Yeah, now's the time to get those pruners out if you haven't. Our dormancy, our dormant period is leaving soon. And in fact, that is our Dirtbag Dictionary term. Dormant.
Okay.
You know, just what the heck does it mean?
Sure.
And we'll try to remember to do that. And let's see, half past the hour, our garden stumper. If you are the first person that calls in with the correct answer, you will be entitled to a free garden tool, hand garden tool sharpening
just
from Coley Farm Store.
And just in time for the pruning that you're going to have to do.
That's right.
Right.
I don't think he's too backed up on that. And then we will move into the garden and the farm. Time to start seeds. This is the time that you can get serious on that. And we'll talk about ways that you can do that and what you can plant even outside now. It's kind of chancy still. But and then, we're curious. We'll get an update on the farm stands and the land use tweaks. It's more than a tweak. You know, whenever you're taking 3,500 acres out of farmland or this, something,
this is
some
the
figure.
The legislature's in session, and there's been a lot of I would call bad bills, and I wish it's a short session and it shouldn't be happening, but it is. So
I see. And then we've got all sorts of other things that we can talk about too, but first of all I want to talk about what I'm trying to understand, and that is the word redouble. And is it ever used besides anything except our efforts? We don't talk about redoubling our funding, do we? No, we don't talk about that. And it's a kind of curious word anyway, isn't it? Because what does that mean? That you've already doubled your efforts before, and now you're going to redouble those efforts, so you're going to be four times as much as you did before, which was already twice as much? That's a lot. So I don't know when I hear that, is it just being used? It's just being used.
It's not a word I find myself using. So
no.
I there are some other strange words out there in the English language too.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
That one's a good
one. Well, it's fine to use it, but mean it or have it meaningful. Because sure. Oftentimes it's just a last, I think they mean well, but if it didn't work before, will doubling it work again? That's what I'm trying to understand this month. Okay,
yeah.
Let us get it on. And that's a double, that's a pun there because the plant of the month is lettuce. You know,
yes.
We haven't really talked about lettuce. it's not hard to grow, and it can tolerate cooler temperatures. In fact, it can grow in 45 to 80 degrees, but when it gets hot outside, then we need it. It could use some shade during the hottest part of the days, or it might get bitter. But that's not to say that you can grow lettuce in total shade in the summer, because it still needs sunlight, and so shading is the key. And yeah, you might even try popping in some seeds outside now, but it can also be easily started inside. The problem, and this is kind of where we'll pick up a little bit later on seed starting, is that it is a very wimpy plant, and it can get tall and leggy pretty quickly. And unlike tomatoes, which has a little stouter stem, boy, lettuce, just once it keels over, it's done.
So I remember, Glenn, some many, many, many years ago, head lettuce got kind of a bad name, and people were growing leaf lettuce.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't remember too much about all that. You're probably more the lettuce expert than I am. But it seems like it's a lot easier to grow a leafy type of lettuce than it is a head lettuce, like the kind you buy in the store.
Yeah, not many home gardeners grow the iceberg type lettuce. Mm-hmm. You know, it's all, I mean, some of it balls a little bit more. Some of the butter lettuces and whatnot do have a little more of a head shape, if you will. But I've never grown iceberg lettuce, nor I don't think I've ever seen it grown other than in the fields in maybe California.
Yeah, so you were speaking about the leaf lettuce.
Well, just any type. Yeah, I mean, it all kind of starts out looking the same. But boy, there's a any kind of variety or color you might want, if it's long as it's red or green or purple.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, well, I remember, you know, the idea that the leaf lettuce would have more nutrition because the leaves were fully chlorophylled and it was, you know, good for you.
Yeah,
where head lettuce or iceberg lettuce was
yes,
mostly water.
Well, the butter lettuces that I've grown in the past, which are just tender, you know, kind of delicious. They're not the deepest green around, especially on the inner leaves there. And yet I grow them and would encourage everybody to grow. Mm-hmm. It's nice to get a packet of seeds that has multiple varieties.
Really?
Yeah, you can get blends.
Mm, interesting.
The thing there is not to cull out the weakest ones, because that might be all of a variety that's just not as comes up as quickly or whatnot, so... Mm-hmm. Be careful. Mm-hmm. And it's fun to see what you get. I mean, they'll tell you it's oak leaf lettuce or burgundy or whatever, the varieties. But it's a good way to broaden your horizons and extend the season in some cases. That's another nice thing about the leaf lettuces is that you can harvest the outer leaves and continue with the let it grow.
Great.
You don't harvest the whole head.
Makes me almost hungry.
Well, you always go to lunch after.
I know.
This. Do you ever order a salad?
Have not yet.
Okay.
Good idea, though. Okay.
Okay, so that is our plant of the month there. Once again, let me remind you, if you have any gardening questions, 503-231-8187. Should we get to our first musical selection, or do we want to talk about growing citrus?
Well, we could sort of talk about citrus and then...
Okay. And then we'll get that, and Ty will get that piece up to queued up for us.
Yeah.
Okay,
so
citrus in Portland or Western Oregon or Eastern Oregon. Well, maybe not. I don't know.
I think you could grow them. If you grow them in containers, you pretty much can grow them anywhere where there's enough light
warm. And you have some place to roll it to.
You need a place to put them. And... Out at our little nursery, we grow a lot of citrus plants because a lot of people want to do it. I call it winter fruit, and it's fun. I mean, it's really nice to, you know, in January, February, to go eat mandarin oranges or, of course, lemons are really Meyer lemon.
Yeah.
Meyer lemon is a very popular citrus, probably the most popular one that people grow in containers, and it is really pretty darn easy. I mean, the main thing is just, you know, you put it out in the spring after danger of hard frost has passed. I mean, a light frost won't hurt them, but you don't want anything lower than probably 30 degrees, and preferably not even that. But if they're out there and it happens, it's not going to hurt the plant. But
is it helpful to water them before a cold snap is coming?
I would not say so. No, I mean, not because if the cold snap is coming, you're not going to leave them outside, right?
Uh huh.
So the idea is have a sunny, well lit location indoors, and move them in. Depending upon, you know, obviously where you live and all that, but probably by sometime in October, when we start getting into frost danger time, then bring them inside. And keep them, like I said, in a fairly well lit location. One of the biggest dangers of growing citrus is overwatering, because once winter has come and they stop growing, and they even in a warm you wouldn't want to put them in some place where they're getting a lot of heat, but a cool room is perfect for them. And they don't need a lot of water in the winter. You want to be careful with that. Check the what we do with a smaller pot is you can actually lift the pot to see
how small are we talking here?
Well,
or how large?
Yeah, typically the citrus you buy in the nursery is going to be like, say, in a 1 gallon pot. If it's a you know, you can buy them bigger than that too, but say
that's about the size of a small, or excuse me, it's about the size of an old coffee can or a number 10 tin.
Exactly.
That might be a little small of a gallon, but that's the size to envision.
Yes. And I would recommend, I mean, you can certainly, they'll stay, be happy in that pot for a little while, but you know, pretty soon you'll want to move it into a bigger one, like a 5 gallon pot would be sort of the next size that I would use, just because it's, you can use a bigger one, but there's no point in having a great big pot yet until the plant gets a little larger.
Easier to move.
Yeah, absolutely, and check its water and all that kind of thing. So a 5 gallon pot, the citrus we grow, and one thing you want to check when you buy the citrus plant from the nursery is what the rootstock is. Hopefully they know, because we use a rootstock called Flying Dragon, which is the most, it's a very, very dwarfing rootstock. And a citrus tree on that will rarely get over 6 feet tall, and that takes quite a while to get there. But in commercial orchards of citrus, they grow them bigger. And of course, for your home, a big citrus tree in a pot is probably not totally appropriate.
Are the commercial trees grafted at all?
Oh yeah, mm-hmm. They're all either grafted or grown from cuttings. A cutting grown citrus, however, is again potentially a very large plant. So, it's better to get one that's propagated on a rootstock. And in our case, I would recommend checking to, find out if it's on Flying Dragon, because that's the best dwarfing rootstock for citrus.
Do big box stores sell citrus?
Good question. I don't look for them there.
Well, maybe our listeners shouldn't either.
I think it's important to support your local nursery, and you know, there's a number of small ones, nurseries around Oregon, especially around Portland, that I'm sure have citrus plants.
And so what kind of citrus are we talking about here? I mean, the gamut? I know you've brought some in before, and they were very tasty. I remember from kumquat is kumquat considered a citrus?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. To, you know, oranges, they weren't large.
Mandarin oranges.
And I don't know if you can do grapefruit even.
Yeah, you can grow them all. There's really, I mean, in terms of ease of growing, I mean, the lemon might be more on the easiest side. It seems to be very productive and, you know, but it's a lemon. And if you want something sweeter than a lemon, I would say a mandarin, Satsuma mandarin, would be a good one. It's also quite easy to grow and bears a lot of fruit. You can grow navel oranges. I mean, they're nice big fruit. You might have to support a branch with a navel orange on it because they can get so large. But
I would think that the stumbling block for anybody is just where are they going to put it? Mm-hmm. And if it needs light, particularly, are you going to sacrifice some of your house space for that?
Well, of course, remember that they're an evergreen plant, so they do need light. If you don't have light, they will drop their leaves and the fruit will not be happy.
So let's say this year, you know, when we didn't drop even to really below 35 till December, could it be out until it's 35?
Yes. Yeah.
So you could bring it in and, you know, spend overnight in the garage in the dark because it's night, and then bring it out in the next day when it's above temp.
You could do that, sure. If you bring it into a cool room in your house, it's probably going to ripen a little faster because it's a little higher temperature during the night and stuff. But certainly, you can do that.
How big are the biggest ones that you have, the containers? Do you need a forklift to move them? You use a forklift to move them?
Yeah, we have some larger ones, but they're only for propagation purposes. Uh-huh. So the ones that we market that we sell nurseries are in 1 gallon pots.
That would be easy. But they're not going to produce in a 1 gallon pot.
Well, believe it or not, they often will.
They can.
Yeah, especially on that Flying Dragon rootstock. It really it gets the fruit going fast, gets it blooming and fruiting quite rapidly. Oftentimes, uh, a, a citrus grown like that will bloom the first year. I mean, that the same, almost like the same year that you that it's that, that you get it.
But you wouldn't want to leave it in the 1 galloner for very long.
No, I
as
no.
you said.
No, I mean, right. you know, usually, I mean, a few months is not going to hurt it, but
no, but yeah, a year, 2 years,
no,
and root bound.
And then the other thing to keep in mind is that it should get annual fertilizer, and most nurseries sell citrus fertilizer, which is fine, and it's one of the main things is that citrus is an acid-loving plant, so that's why the citrus fertilizer is important and has iron, which will keep the leaves from getting light-colored. And
yeah. All right.
Yeah.
Well, that's another thing to put on the lunch menu.
Yeah, you know, it'd be fun. I mean, if any listener at some point would like to call in and tell us about their experiences growing citrus, that'd be fun to hear. So.
Right. Okay, well, looks like Ty's on the phone, but I'll set up our musical break here. Of course, last week was this week, Super Bowl.
Mm.
Yes, on Sunday. And next Sunday, actually, it's next Monday. Well, what? You got to get us up here. Here we go. Okay, well, that was our first musical break. But so the Super Bowl was Sunday, and on next Monday, I'm going to, well, probably won't be, but it might be, a super bloom in the California deserts outside of San Diego, going for a few days there to check out the blooms there. So super blooms, sometimes they're called when you get, you know, a lot of rain in the desert, and then the next few months you get this riot.
That sounds like fun. Are you flying or driving?
Flying, yeah, yeah. Oh. Visit a friend of my wife's, college friend of my wife, and then just short. We'll be back by the weekend.
Cool. Great.
So, super. That's the name. That's the theme here today. So, that was The Duchess of Coolsville. Isn't that a great name for an album? Or actually a box set of Ricky Lee Jones, the old Donovan song. We're having some problems here in the studio. Of the music coming over our headphones, not sounding very pristine, but apparently it's going out over the air.
Good.
Fine, so.
Yeah, that's great.
Ricky Lee Jones. Okie dokie. Well, okay, into pruning here on the Dirt Bag. This is not necessarily the last chance, but for dormant pruning, it's now or you're taking chances. In fact, you know, are things budding out there earlier than normal, or do you know? Have you made that observation yet?
Well, again, like we're a little cooler than you are, so there's definitely pushing starting, but I wouldn't call it. You know, there's no extensions yet. Any buds haven't opened up or anything. You know,
well, I'm going to combine dormant, our dirtbag dictionary with dormant. And so if you can weave that into your explanation here.
Sure. Well, I was going to say Prunus mume, also called flowering apricot, it blooms super early. And it started blooming way earlier than it should have this year.
How way?
Well, I'd say early January.
Is that how many weeks is that early?
Oh, about a month.
Oh.
And then, of course, I think I mentioned on the show last time about loquat, which blooms in the winter anyway. So, you know, that's kind
of
unfortunate characteristic of the plant. But the general, you know, like the apples and pears and so forth are still, at our place anyway, still pretty dormant. They're not, nothing, you know, I'm not worried about pruning or anything with those. They're definitely still waiting. But it's getting close. I mean, with this kind of weather we're having, is so unusual to me. I mean, to be in
next week, it sounds like it's going to be more normal. Mm. You know, highs in the upper 40s, lows in the mid 30s.
Yeah.
So let's take a break here and go to the phones.
Sure.
Okay, who do we have up first? Okay, you're on the air with the Dirtbag.
Hi, hopefully it's me.
Yep, that's you. Thank you.
I got two questions.
All right.
Okay, so I'm having a debate about, my mom wants to till up the garden. She's convinced that that'll make our garden better. Like, she feels like it's compacted. And I've always kind of gone with your technique and just post-holed and planted, or mm-hmm. amended the soil where I planted. But if you could just kind of give me some fuel so I can win that debate. Is my first question. And the second question is, do you have any like good recommendations for organic like fertilizers?
Yes. We'll take the latter first, the fertilizers.
Yeah. Well, what we use out at the nursery is composted chicken manure made by a local company called Stutzman, which is just not down the road from us. And it's really a good fertilizer. It definitely helps the plants grow and feeds the soil, and we're pretty happy with it. I mean, there's many other things, there's things I would avoid with organic fertilizers too. Some of the sewage kind of offshoot, leftovers and stuff. I don't like those, but good composted manure is great. For my opinion, and there's other ones too, Glenn, I'm sure can think of some.
Yeah, with organic fertilizers, you're not going to get huge numbers for the three nutrients that are listed, the NPK, nitrogen, phosphorus, potassium. And so it's going to be, somewhere, 3-5-4 or 3-3-3 or something like that. But in conjunction with that, what Jim is saying, or what Jim said about the compost, is good. What is composted there? Is it chicken or steer?
Chicken manure,
which is pretty high in nitrogen, which is good. Mm-hmm. But some, most composts you can't consider, at least home composts, you couldn't consider them fertilizer. I mean, there's some nutrients in there. In fact, there's lots of nutrients in there, including many micronutrients, which are very important, but their numbers are less than one as far as the percentage of nitrogen, for example. Chicken would be an exception to that.
Yeah, and manure is definitely different. I mean, than home compost, with chicken manure particularly, you wouldn't want to use it uncomposted because it will burn. It's so strong.
Right. I mean, any manure uncomposted is
not good.
Yeah, not advised. So the key in this, now this gets us back to your first question, is to also make sure you have plenty of organic matter in the soil. And the nice thing about this is that you don't have to do anything except add it. You don't have to dig it in and then give it some years, 2 or 3 years. I haven't rototilled some of my raised beds in more than 25 years because I don't need to. And when you do that, you destroy the tilth, the structure of the soil. So it's best to stay away from that if you can. However, I don't know the condition of what your mother's garden plot is. Is it also your garden? Are you gardening there too?
Yeah.
Yeah. So what is your position?
Oh, I mean, it's just, you know, it was just kind of like yard that I stripped back, and it's, so, I mean, it is pretty compacted, but I just like post hole.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Like a hole and put in some, like, I usually put in like Fox Farms, like ocean forest soil in the hole and just grow something in the hole.
And
is
that
how I usually do it.
Has that been successful?
That seems to work pretty good.
Yeah. And in the long run, you're improving the whole garden, assuming you're not planting in the same hole just time and time again. And what is your mother's position? Or why doesn't she feel that your approach is not as successful?
I think she just wants the whole entirety of it to be, you know, kind of soft and...
Oh, I see. I see.
You know, I think that's just her ideal garden is, you know, like huge bed of perfect soil.
And if we said, okay, you need to strip off the top 2 feet and then, you know, bring in something, you know, whatever, who would do that? Would that be you?
Yeah. You said that's probably a good idea then, huh?
No. I'm not saying that at all. I'm just saying who would be doing that work? Is it her or you?
Oh, I would be doing that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Well, you know, I've always said, and apparently you've listened to me before, you know, because I'm kind of my approach to gardening is a kind of a combination of laissez-faire and laissez-ass gardening. And so I would rather nature do my gardening for me. And it can. You just have to let it. And it takes a little time. But I think buying time is doing what you and I do. And that's we're just preparing the hole from where we're going to plant a potato or a tomato, for example. It might be different, or it will be different, if you wanted to scatter seeds like carrots or something like that. Although carrots aren't really, I shouldn't say carrots, lettuce. They're not real deep-rooted plants, so it might be okay. The other thing that I would offer first is to make sure that you plant a cover crop when the ground is otherwise going to be fallow. And that could be in the spring or it could be in the winter. Do you or have you planted a cover crop?
I usually just put leaves over it in the winter.
Yeah. Well, that's the second best thing to do. But next year, think about a cover crop because those roots can really go down far and penetrate. And if they're a legume, such as fava beans or crimson clover or any of the vetches, they'll also fix nitrogen in the soil, which means they can pull nitrogen from the air and then with the help of bacteria convert it into a form of nitrogen that can be used, you know, whether that's ammonia and urea. But that they're cheap and they're the single best thing that you can do to increase your soil fertility. And one of my sayings comes to mind now, and that you can't fertilize your way to soil fertility.
Right.
Okay. So it's the organic matter that's the key there.
Okay, well, that gives me good advice, and I appreciate it, and I love your show, and thanks.
Great.
I'm glad you're back in studio.
And keep us informed how it goes if you think about it.
All right, I will.
All right. Thanks for calling. Okay, Tyre, did we lose the other one? No. Who do we got? I didn't hear that. Okay. Okay, now you're on the air. This is the Dirtbag. Thanks for calling. Maybe lost him. Okay. Okay. Well, we will, let's see what we're talking. Oh, pruning. Pruning, yes. Maybe we should do our garden stumper first. We're at 11:34. Let's do that. Ty, can you get us right to our theme? don't know what, don't know who, don't know how, don't know why. Okay, Jim's up.
Okay, well, this is kind of a fun one for me to think about when I was contemplating what I would suggest for a stumper. Out at our nursery, we do a lot of propagation. And there are really essentially two ways that plants multiply themselves, and they're described differently, possibly sexual propagation or asexual or vegetative propagation. Sexual propagation is by seed, basically. So you get pollination happens, male flowers pollinate female flowers. Then you have a seed, and then you plant the seed, and the seed will produce a plant that's an unknown. Especially with fruiting plants, everyone is new. It's and you may get a great new fruit, but more than likely you won't, because it takes a lot of crosses to come up with something better. But anyway, that's called sexual propagation, and asexual propagation is a different method, which allows you to multiply a variety over and over and over again and continue having the same variety. So basically, this stumper is probably fairly easy, but I'd like a listener to tell us two methods of asexual propagation.
Okay. Two methods of asexual propagation in plants.
Yes. Yes.
Okay, the first person who calls our number with the correct answer, 503-231-8187, will be entitled to a free hand garden tool sharpening from Coley Farm Store, Northeast 42nd and Alberta Street. Okay. All right. Back to pruning.
Yeah, with that sharp, newly sharpened tool.
That's right.
And what I was going to mention, I think I talked about it before, but years ago, especially, it seemed like a lot of people had planted kiwis, and I just have to say, this is like you're right at the end to me of the kiwi pruning time, and it's pretty darn important if you want a good crop off especially your fuzzy kiwi or your hardy kiwis, to prune the darn thing, because otherwise they just kind of peter out with long, long shoots, and you don't get such a nearly as good a crop or as large a fruit.
Yeah, the same with grapes.
Yep.
I mean, it's similar, not the same, but similar.
Yep.
Pruning, and you know, this is the last month to do it. I mean, you can do it at any time, but then you're not going to get as much fruit, and it could be harmful.
So if you have that kiwi in your backyard or in your garden area or whatever, and you've got these shoots that grew last year that are typically pretty long, if the plant has reasonable fertilizer and you water it once in a while, you want to do just hold your breath and cut it back to no more than 8 buds. You just count them out from where the shoot started to grow from the branch that it was on, and cut all the rest off. And then those buds that you leave will be the ones that'll push out new growth and flowers and fruit.
For fruiting plants, edible fruiting plants, my rule of thumb is that it's better to prune than not to prune.
Yep.
And it's better to prune badly, if you will, than not to prune. And badly would mean you're just cutting willy-nilly.
And,
even with grapes and kiwis.
Willy-nilly?
You haven't heard that term?
I have, but I wouldn't just... I mean, you could just take a chainsaw and do willy-nilly.
Well, that's what I did, to my... remember this? My experiment on my espaliered pear trees and apple trees.
They were pretty big, though, right?
No.
No?
I mean, they just have a lot of growth, and I wasn't getting many fruit, and I was... spending a lot of time pruning to keep them narrow.
Mm.
Especially with pears, they were pruned I mean, they bear on older wood in many of the varieties. And, you know, if I want to keep them narrow, like a typical espalier plant, I'm cutting off the fruit bearers. Mm-hmm. So I said, forget it. I'm going to try this experiment. Thinking in my mind that Oregon State did an experiment, the extension, about blueberries. And they use blades to prune their blueberries on the side and then a horizontal blade on the top to cut the blueberries. And they found they had about the same production with a lot less labor. Mm-hmm. So I'm trying it because they were coming out otherwise. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's go back to the phones. Ed?
Hi.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for calling.
Good morning.
What you got?
I'm calling about the quiz.
Okay.
Two different ways.
Yep.
Yeah. All right. So I believe one would be layering. You layer that branch right down in the dirt and hope that it roots. And of course, the other would be to take a cutting and see if you could root it in the soil. That's my guess.
Well, you know, both of those ways are, there's a lot of different ways to do it, and those are two of them. You've named two of them.
Okay.
And others would be like budding or grafting. That's typically what we do at the nursery, but we also do the cuttings that you put in the soil. Layering is not so common typically, but it certainly does work. So
yeah. Okay.
Yeah, and it probably doesn't work quite as broadly as those other methods. So,
yeah,
it's this last summer. I layered it wasn't a fruiting plant, but it was a bee plant. I write a column for now it's quarterly or five times a year newsletter for the Oregon State Beekeepers Association. And I have a new name. It's about a plant, one of my favorite plants that bees like. And so I've renamed my column now, Bees Love These.
Nice.
So this one, the Caryopteris, is what I did. And they're still kind of dormant now, so I don't know that it took. But there were roots that I layered underground.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah.
All right. So if you would like the free tool, Sharpening at Coley Farm Store, hang on the line, and Ty will take your information.
All right. Thanks so much.
You bet.
Enjoy
thank you.
The show.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great. Thanks for your call. And I just also have to mention, apple. You know, typically rootstock is propagated by, it's not layering exactly, but it's similar. It's in a stool bed, which is sort of fascinating. So if you, let's say you plant like an M7 rootstock, and then you start putting sawdust up along the mm-hmm. trunk, and as it grows, you keep putting sawdust, and the shoots that are growing will form roots.
Yeah.
And then in the fall, you take the sawdust away and you cut them off, and then you have
rootstock.
And then that starts to grow again the next year, and you do the same thing?
Rooted rootstock. I've done that when I was planting a lot of apples. The thought occurred to me, you know, that sometimes these are considered clones.
Yeah.
You know, but I'm wondering if they're true clones or if there is any part of the DNA of the rootstock that is imparted into the plant.
You mean after it's grafted?
Oh, yeah.
There can be some, I think there's definitely effects of disease resistance and some other things that can mm-hmm, go into mm-hmm, the into mm-hmm. the plant. It won't go into the fruit I don't think there's anything. Fruit is a different creature, but yeah, there's definitely can be, rootstock can have an effect.
Well, obviously, for the, We're running out of time because we have other things to cover here, but I'll tell you why, you know, what I think about the chicken or the egg, mm-hmm. which came first, because something you mentioned there just reminded me of this, because once the chicken is the chicken, then it's the chicken. So what was the chicken before it was the chicken? Maybe it was a new, I don't know, you can make up any name, just some other feathered bird. And so then the bird laid an egg, and it was, you know, during a solar storm. The genes were scrambled, no pun intended. And then when the bird emerged, it wasn't the original bird, it was a new bird, it was a chicken. So which came first? The egg. Had to have.
Yeah.
If with my reasoning anyway. Yeah, you're giving me I think that makes sense. You can think about it, though, and come back. No, there's a flaw in that reasoning.
Well, you can't have the chicken without the egg.
What do you mean?
Well,
what I'm saying.
Yeah, the chicken doesn't...
It doesn't exist unless it was born a chicken.
Something had to come before it to make it happen.
It's something different.
Yeah.
Something different from what it was. That's right.
Right.
Yeah, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay, let's move on. Hey, let's just take a musical break and get us straightened out here. Okay, we're on our super swing here. And next we're going to Candy Cane. I thought, well, that almost sounds like a stage name because I have a couple of her records, blues. And so I looked it up, Wikipedia, and Candy Cane, you know, adult star. Or what do they call it? Adult entertainment star. You know, well, that makes sense with a candy cane, but apparently she was that, but then she became a blues singer. And so this is called Superhero, and she's won several awards even.
I'm not gonna take it laying down. Superhero, I'll keep on fighting. There's no way I'm laying down and dying. I'm Wonder Woman, I'm here to stay. If you can.
Candy Cane, Superhero. Let's just jump back before we jump forward to finish up our talk on pruning and what is dormant. When we say this is the trees are dormant, this is the time to prune if you're going to prune in the winter. I should mention, as I've done for 20 years, that I prune my pears and apples in the summer. So they're not dormant then, but you can also prune them at that point. But we're talking about dormant pruning now. So what is dormant? I mean, you said that the buds aren't really there yet, but they're pushing. Is that what the word that you used?
Yeah, there's things as plants come out of dormancy. There's a sort of a process that you can observe, and the bud will start to push. So you'll start to start to swell. I guess would be another word for it.
At that point, is it not dormant then?
It's leaving dormancy.
But it's still okay in our timeline to prune it.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah. And warmer weather might push that a little bit more.
Yeah. I mean, I've done pruning even after the plants have buds have fully opened if I had to. I mean, it's not ideal, but you can do that. I mean, it's obviously better to do it when the plant's still dormant, as we say.
Right.
Yeah.
And what is the benefit of doing it when it's dormant as opposed to budding?
Well, the plant's already putting a lot of energy into that new growth that's come out, and you're basically, I mean, that's just more like what you're talking about pruning in the summer when you prune after that energy's going out there and you're taking it off. So
yeah, we don't want the tree. I don't want the tree to get bigger.
No, and in this case, you're going to be, the energy that's going into those buds that have already forced to already come out and the leaves and so forth, and you cut them off, then you're taking that energy away from the plant.
Our listeners may have heard the term dormant spraying or dormant oil, and you put and these are considered organic, the dormant oil. They are applied to the tree when the tree is dormant which means there's no buds or leaves on there because this oil can just chemically burn them otherwise.
That's right. That's right. Right. So a non-dormant spray is much more diluted.
Yeah. So that would be dormant oil versus horticultural oil or superior oil. It's just a much thinner, like you say, diluted.
Well, I wouldn't describe it that way, Glenn, because it's not the type of oil so much. It's the concentration of the oil. So well, dormant oil is not a type of oil, really. It's just it's a thicker, higher density concentration of the oil.
Is it the same oil that one would use? I mean, when the horticultural oil or that's what they sell it as, horticultural oil. Is it the same oil?
Yeah, I mean, there's neem oil,
Well, but that's not a dormant oil.
But it can't be. I'm not so familiar with it because I don't use it, but I was just thinking of how you would describe the oil itself. So,
well, I'm assuming it's a petroleum product.
Mm-hmm.
Neem oil, of course, comes from neem.
Right. So, yeah. If it's a petroleum product, then describing it as dormant would mean that it's a higher concentration of actual oil mixed with some liquid, other liquid water.
Yeah. And even though it's a petroleum product, it's still considered organic, I believe.
Yep. And that, for that use, yeah.
Okay. Well, that's it. We'll move on from pruning then. But what will we move on to? Seed starting. Just a little bit here. Sure. Just some keys here. And we've gone over these every year now for a while. The key is most seeds germinate best in the 60, 70, 80 degree range. And you can find all sorts of information online or in books on what seeds like cooler germinating temperatures and what require higher ones. Generally, the cold or cool weather crops, lettuce, broccoli, cauliflower, cabbage, all the greens, these and peas, they're considered cool season crops, and they will germinate in lower temperatures. But the warm season crops, tomatoes, peppers, eggplant, those require warmer temperatures to germinate. And so that's why you get certain heating mats that you can buy, and so you can germinate them at other temperatures. It's not that they won't germinate, they'll germinate sooner. If you germinate inside your house, you can germinate anywhere you want. It can be completely dark because they don't need light to germinate. But the key is once they do germinate is to make sure they have light and some wind resistance, have a fan going or just come by and brush them several times an hour or whatever. Because the worst thing for home-started seeds is they tip towards the light and they grow tall and then they just topple over.
They have weak stems.
Yep.
Just come leggy.
That's right. And so we want them to be under stress, just like they would outside with winds buffeting them. So that's why greenhouses have, that's one reason why greenhouses have fans going. Mm-hmm. You have fans going? You're probably not growing vegetable starts in there for the most part.
Typically not.
No. But it also keeps air movement, and that prevents fungal diseases from starting. So that is just the key. If you don't have a greenhouse and you don't need a greenhouse, you can put lights, and it's not a bad idea. They're pretty cheap these days, the LED grow lights. Put them just an inch or two above the plant and then raise the light as the plants get taller. But, blow on them. Every time you walk by or just walking by will help create currents.
If you get close enough to them, you can sing them songs.
Yeah,
They're especially loud songs.
Yes, if you're real close, then the vibrations would help them too.
Yeah. I was going to mention it. It sounded like, when you're talking about plants, seeds you can plant require warmer temperatures. I remember, beans, for example, if you plant them in soil that's too cool too early, then they can actually rot and not even grow.
Right.
So it's important to know, you know, when to plant, and the cooler ones you can plant, like we were talking about earlier, you plant those now, but or miss some anyway.
Yeah. And it's that, you know, unless it's 45 degrees, there's not going to be a lot of germination.
Yeah.
And before you get the plants outside or before you seed, it's not a bad idea now to start baiting for slugs. Mm. And there's some organic products available, including Sluggo and Escargo, and there's some other ones that use iron phosphate as their active ingredient. Mm-hmm. And so these are also considered organic.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, slugs are funny.
And tough, too, but now's the time to do it.
Yeah.
Another easy thing to do is, if you have it within you, is to just put a board down or a piece of plywood or something over the bed that you're going to be planting in a month, and then pull it up in a week or so, and there might be a dozen slugs that are adhering to the bottom of it, and you can slice them or dispatch as of how you feel fit. Not into your neighbor's yard, however. Not cool.
Right.
Okay, we have a minute or two, Jim. Do you want to just give us an update on what's happening in the legislature as far as this?
Sure. Yeah, I went down to Salem last Wednesday to testify against a bill, House Bill 4153, which is commonly known as the Farm Store Bill. That was frustrating because the short session is not the place where such bills should be considered. It's very controversial and complicated. And among its negative concepts, negative things are basically allowing on our farmland stores and event centers and allowing, right now, farm stand is a totally permitted thing to do, and farmers like to do that to sell their own produce. But this farm store bill basically allows a landowner to offer a lot of other products not grown on the farm. As I said, they can have like wedding venues and concerts and serve prepared food and alcoholic beverages. Sadly, the organization that is promoting this is the same organization under a different name that promoted Measure 37 20 years ago, which was almost a disaster, almost a catastrophe for Oregon agriculture, which is a huge part of our state's economy and feeds us. And I just really love the fact that Oregon has this great climate and some of the best farmland in the world. I want to keep it that way. As I like to say, farmland is for farming, and bars and restaurants are for small towns and cities where they can help the local economy. And so,
is there currently any rules about a farm stands as to what they can sell?
Yes. You basically, the idea of a farm stand is that you can sell up to 25% of non-farm grown products, but the rest has to be something that you grew or your neighbor did. That's in this case.
So, could you import it from California and sell it?
Not to be the larger amount. In theory, you could do a small amount of that, but not the larger quantity. It has to be near very, you know, neighboring farms or your farm.
I see.
Basically.
And what would be the new rules on that, or there wouldn't be any?
Well, you essentially have a bowl of apples that you grew, and the rest of your 10,000 square foot building can be having the basically prepared food, alcoholic beverages, concert. It's a very, very strange bill to me, and the claims that it's necessary because we've lost farms is to me very false and misleading, because the USDA defines a farm as a place where $1,000 or more of crops or livestock are sold. So when the claims are that Oregon has lost 2,000 farms in recent years, well, a landowner, somebody who owns 5 acres, and maybe they grew a little bit of food on that 5 acres, and they decided to sell it to some wealthy person who comes in and puts a McMansion on it, that wasn't a farm, in my opinion.
Yeah, you know? That's kind of what Measure 37 was somewhat about there. But we're going to have to wrap it up here, Jim, unfortunately. So, but we'll any idea of which way they're leaning?
I'm slightly optimistic that the thing we're really trying to do is to get it out of this short session.
I see.
Where we can have, because it, you don't have time to really, you know.
You need more time.
We couldn't even testify because there wasn't enough time at the hearing to do it. So.
Okay, well, stay tuned for next month. The session will be over.
Yep.
So we'll know more by then. Okay, that's Jim Gilbert. Thanks, Jim. Thank you, Ty, for coming in. This is Glenn Andreessen. We'll be back with the Dirtbag, a garden variety show, in a month.
See you next month, Glenn.
Bye.
Thanks.
Listening to KBOO Portland. Coming up next is Jazz Lives, right after these news headlines.
Bienvenidos a un breve informativo en su estación comunitaria KBOO 90.7